You're listening to Radio Influence.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cast. You know that. We do that all the time. And so when it's time, I say to you, it is the Babe Cast. You know what? I've been doing a bunch of things. And I have to tell you something. I don't know why, but I have some kind of, do you have something called This TV? I've got all these things that I never heard of in my life, like TV antenna and things I've never heard of. But lately, I'm getting Taxi Driver and Saturday Night Fever back to back. And this is movies all the time. And it's like pretty decent movies. But Taxi Driver was on and Saturday Night Fever was on before that. And I'm thinking, oh, I think I kind of like that because, you know, I don't like that dancing around stuff. Oh, are we going to have to see that in... I used to love going to see that. I would go to Rockefeller Center and see the lighting of the tree. Do you think that my incredible, how shall I put this? I always want to say truth or dare because I don't really know what the hell I'm saying half the time. But I was going to tell you about going to Rockefeller Center, but there's so many people that you have to like climb up three buildings and hang out the window to see that, but it is a pretty wonderful thing. Once in a while, I used to get like a limo guy and I'd give him like $100 and say, just take me around just so I can see things or something like that. Let me do real things here. Andrea Kramer is joining us. Andrea Kramer's so busy, it's not even funny, but she gave us time and that's all in the world you're going to like. And I got to tell you, this is really a great interview, even if I say so myself. Andrea Kramer coming up on The Babe Show. Well, now tell me, did you do something fun just now, or are they trying to? I always wonder, do you come back to the East and then you go back to the West Coast? Or how do you do this thing with the HBO thing? I mean, act like you can't do it.
Oh, well, that was for NFL Network. That call is for NFL Network because I only work for three networks and teach graduate school.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You have that journalism class at BU. Is that what you have too now?
I do, yes. It'll be in the spring.
Now, do you like it? Do you like that graduate school thing?
Are we shooting already?
Oh, yeah, this is the way I am. I just talk like this, and this is it.
Okay, so we're on the show. We're on the podcast.
Yes, would you like to get ready for your voice, or you
no.
just want to talk to me?
No. I just always, no. So what do you want to know about graduate school?
So tell me about graduate school. I'm not going, but I just thought since you were talking about your graduate school, I thought, what's that like? Do you get tired of that or is it okay? What happens with that?
Well, it's a lot of work and you're not doing it for the money. I probably, like you, get asked to talk to a lot of young people. And this opportunity presented itself. And what happened was a woman that I know who actually lives in my hometown is a journalism professor at Boston University. And she was doing this. They're very hands-on in the program. And she was taking 14 students to London to operate as working journalists during the Olympics. And they were filing for local TV stations and radio stations and NPR and things of that nature. So she asked me if I would come in and guest lecture to her students about my experiences covering the Olympics for NBC. And so I came in and, you know, I had video and I had this and I had that and did my whole little presentation. And when I was done, she said, you know, that was pretty amazing. Would you be interested in being an adjunct? And I said, well, you know, I couldn't do it during the football season, but I might be interested in that. So went and had lunch with her and the dean of the College of Communication and the chair of the journalism program. And they basically said, we want you. Teach whatever you want. We'll give you whatever support you need. You don't have to come to meetings. Yay. You just, you know, we'll give you as much autonomy as you want. And so I created my class. I created my own class. And it's been great. And it just is my way of being able to give back. It's just that simple. And as I said, it's a lot of work, but I love my students. I take incredible pride when they go on to jobs and they stay in touch with me. And it's been really, really good.
You know,
and I'm a badass because I don't take any crap from them.
I love that. And for people who don't know, she's kind of vertically challenged like I am. Now, I have some things for you.
What does that have to do with
Well, I
anything?
Said, well, I was just, in case they don't know, they...
Does it make our brains vertically challenged?
No, well, your brain is very... You know, it's funny you said, and I'm sure people get... Nobody calls me to talk on anything, ever, Andrea. Do you understand? They don't want me... I'm left over here on the beach, and that's just the way I like it. But nobody ever calls me to ask on anything.
You're living where
stuff.
You want to live, right, babe?
That's what I'm doing. How are you? How's HBO? How's that thing going over there? Seems like you like it okay.
I do. I mean, I love working for Real Sports. I feel that in this day and age, there's not some true journalism that still exists where there aren't conflicts of interest. And, at Real Sports, you know, we'll take anything and anyone on. And basically, the story has to have, even if it's a tangential relationship to sports, and it works. I mean, one of the biggest stories that I did last year was sexual assault in Bikram yoga. And you could sit there and say, well, what does yoga have to do with sports? Well, just enough that we could do a pretty great investigation into it. And it was it was something we worked on for about 8 months, and it was pretty revelatory. I would consider it, one of the top stories I've ever done in my career. So it's just a great, the production staff is better than any I've ever worked with in my career. And they give you the time and the resources to really tell the stories the right way. So, I love it. It's great. 2 months ago, on the October show, I had a story on the future of sports betting in America. And then this month, currently running, I have a story looking at Doug Collins and his son, Chris Collins, who's the head coach at Northwestern Northwestern basketball. So they couldn't be more sort of diametrically opposed stories. But that's the other thing is I'm not just doing football. I get to do a bunch of different things. And it's great. And it challenges me and just fits perfectly into what I want to be doing right now.
You know what, Andrea, from the first time I've ever met you, one of the things I was kind of jotting down like that, but I always put you as a storyteller. I've always done that for, that's who you are to me. Does that make sense?
I take that as the highest of compliments.
It is. Without a doubt.
Well,
I mean,
it's funny. When I was at ESPN 1 year, this young production assistant said to me, gosh, how do you do this year after year? And, it's basically the same stories. Maybe the days of, the names have changed, this and that. And I looked at the kid and I just said, number one, it's kind of like being a Broadway actor. It may be your, thousandth performance, but it's the first one the audience has ever seen. So it's your responsibility to give the audience not only your best performance, but something hopefully they haven't seen before. But I said, but it's our job as storytellers to make each story unique. I mean, I don't want to go in and, this is kind of a weird analogy to make, but, for the New England Patriots, one of the things that Belichick has is all this, and his staff and a lot of the players, because the ones that are older, is this institutional knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And so he could say, you remember in this game, when we faced this front and this, and they'll know what it is, and that's great, okay? I'm just the opposite. I don't want to think, I did the story in 2012, so let me just, give it a different name and a different voice. No, I want to find the different angle, the most compelling way to tell a story that I can. That's what floats my boat. That's what I think is exciting to me. I don't know if that analogy makes any sense to you, but that's why I take it as the highest of compliments when you say that I'm a storyteller, because that's what I love to do. And everybody has a story. You just have to be able to find it and cultivate it and tell it properly.
Yeah, is cultivating, what about that part of it, doing it? Because I'm sitting there listening to what you say, and for me, because in radio, I'll go, this guy did this, and he did that, and blah, blah, and I go to the next thing. I don't have a way of telling a story. I don't have what you have, put it that way.
Well, I don't know if that's the case necessarily, but, once you Look, it's a very artful thing, and I go back to the producers of Real Sports, who are terrific. So, take for example here. This is a good example. Okay, the story that we did that aired on the October Real Sports on the future of sports betting in America. Snooze, boring, you know, numbers, what? But no, who's going to tell the story? You know, I'm the narrator, I'm the reporter, I'm the fact finder, but what voices are we going to use to tell the story? So we go and get Brent Musburger, mm-hmm. who's, you know, a walking soundbite. He's always going to be good. Right. He's always going to be entertaining. We go and get the current and former mayors of Las Vegas, who are married to one another. They've basically been running Las Vegas since 1999. They're like a vaudeville act. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just one nonstop line after another, and they were terrific. And then we go get Governor Chris Christie, whose fight this has been for 6 years to try to legalize sports betting in New Jersey. So all of a sudden, you've got some really compelling characters and voices to tell your story. And then, you know, for me, don't screw up the interviews. And then you start putting it all together, and you use the strength of your material, which is the interviews that you've done and the material that you've elicited, and that's how you tell your story. And I'm one that likes to let the voices tell a lot of the story. I don't like to have, you know, minutes and minutes and minutes of voice tracks in there. But I love it. It's a puzzle. It's very simple. It's a puzzle that the best producers have to put together. And, you know, that story in particular was really hard to tell. And our producer, Jordan Cronick, just did an amazing job doing so.
You know, that's one of the things, like when I do this, it's okay. And I usually talk to people I know, but I love what you have to say. I'll say, well, tell me about this and tell me about that. And you can talk forever because I love what you're saying, which if you're comfortable enough with me, you're pretty okay with it. And so that's what I like. If people are comfortable enough, they can pretty much say what they want at times for me. But that's my attitude, is they can tell it a million times better than I can.
Well, they can, but so, you know, one of the advantages of what you and I are doing right now is, look, we've known each other for a really, really long time, okay? And it yes. doesn't matter how much time has passed mm-hmm. between our conversations or how long we've seen each other, we can pick right back up and we can have a conversation. And, you know, I don't know if your listeners fully understand, you know, what an iconic figure and an important figure that you are, not just in radio, but for women broadcasters, that it's so I have great respect for you. Okay. That being said, we're just having a conversation, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here in my little Lululemons, you know, with a sweaty T-shirt on, and I don't have to worry about my hair and makeup. It's totally different when you put somebody under those lights. In my opinion, it makes it so much harder. You know, you talk to somebody on the phone, and they're very open, and they're very, the words are flowing, the opinions, you put them under the lights, and no matter how much you try to tell them, oh, we're just having a conversation. Ignore that big black void of the camera that's in front of you. You know, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to get people to open up, especially if, you know, if they've been a victim of something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when we did the story in Bikram, I mean, I interviewed three different women who all believe, you know, all said that they'd been raped. That's not easy. It's not, you know, it's almost like you're having a mini therapy session, and you've got to be very informed. You've got to be very, very aware. You have to be extremely respectful. You have to be, you know, you can't be on the attack. You need to be neutral. So it's a different thing than just, you know, you and I having this great conversation, like two old friends catching up.
You know, one of the things, tell me some more about the yoga thing, the Beaker thing and all that, because go that direction a little bit about where you went on that. I want to ask you something else, but that's been in the back of my mind. So let's talk about it. I mean, they really kind of opened up to you a lot there.
Yeah, they did. You know, my producer, Maggie Burbank, and our associate producer, Katie Malone, this idea has been something Maggie's been looking at for a couple of years. And then finally, there were a number of lawsuits that started to be filed against Bikram. And you'll appreciate this story. So we want to interview Bikram. For those who may not know, there is a Bikram. Bikram Choudhury started Bikram Yoga. He's a multimillionaire living in Beverly Hills. You know, he created this brand of yoga. He's a very charismatic figure. And so once these lawsuits started, he basically took off for his homeland of India. So we put in requests to interview him, and people are like, are you kidding? He's not going to talk to you. And I said, well, just wait a minute, because, you know, a certain ego feel that they want their words to be heard. So to make a long story short, we put in the he agrees to the interview, but of course his handler says, but you know, you kind of have to get here soon. Yeah, well, that's really easy. Journalist visas to India are almost impossible to get. We ended up 5:30 on a Monday. I'm in New York shooting our show for CBS, and I get a call. All right, visa just came through. We're leaving tomorrow. We hop on the plane, and there we were. And it was a very intense interview. We subsequently spoke to three of the alleged victims, and it was tough. I mean, a lot of emotion displayed, a lot of tears shed, and you know, I mean, as much as you're an objective journalist, you know, we are also human beings. It's not easy to hear, and to more even than hear, to really feel people's pain when they're talking about things that are just, you know, heinous events that happen to them. And at that moment, they may not have had the strength to say no or to whatever it is. What's really amazing, babe, is that it's almost a complete precursor to what we're seeing now in terms of sexual harassment and sexual assault in sports news and entertainment.
Yeah, and it seems because, and that's another thing that we can go to, which is that everybody in the world, is it Garrison Keillor got blown out yesterday too? And the amount of people is, it's so weird. And I'm like, somehow you feel like it's going to come back in a certain way. And people, not everyone has said the truth, I can assure you, but there are a lot of things that people are coming up and feeling better about it. And people are saying, well, this didn't happen. It didn't happen. I said, well, I believe the women. That's all there is to it. But at some point, is that going to backfire in some way?
In what way? In what sense?
And I'm wondering that if more and more women come out and say, this happened to me, this happened to me, and more, maybe some of them are not exactly true, and then it goes backwards or something. I'm wondering if it's going to go backwards. Well, that's the word I keep using because I can't.
Well, I think it's very astute of you to say that. I was just having this conversation with a female executive today. And, one of the things that she said along these lines is this is going to make it so men aren't going to even want to work with women anymore.
Right.
And that's a pretty big step back. I know for me, one of the concerns I have, and again, let me make this clear. When I say that I have concerns, nothing justifies harassment, assault, using your position to try to take advantage of someone in a physical or sexual way, and then tying that to career advancement or career non-advancement. So there's no... I make no excuses, and I condone none of that behavior, okay?
Right.
As a corollary to that, every major mentor I've ever had in my career has been a man.
Right.
When I first started out, I mean, there were men who literally spent hours with me, working with me, hands-on, teaching me things that I didn't know. I mean, certain skills in television production. And, I mean, really invested their time and energy in developing me, okay? None of them ever tried to sleep with me. None of them ever tried to take advantage of me. They were nothing other than the consummate pros. We had very close professional and personal relationships. There was never even a line. There was no line to cross. It was never there, okay? Until women get in the position where they can be those kind of mentors, then we're quote-unquote stuck with the guys. And are men going to be as willing to mentor young women today in this climate? Again, it all comes back to the same thing. Does it hurt women and their advancement? Because if I didn't have these men who invested their time and energy in me, I don't know where my career would necessarily be. I that was something that was really important to me. I mean, people take chances. Is there going to be less of that done now because men are so worried that things could be misconstrued? I mean, are we at a point where, I mean, if I see somebody and they go, wow, I haven't seen you in ages, you look great. Is that harassment?
No.
I mean, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. But, you know, some of the things that you see out there right now, it's just the sensitivity is so strong. It's so, the sensitivity levels are so high. And, you know, people like you and I who grew up in this business in a bit of a different era, you just kind of learn to, you know, you put your blinders on. You tell people they're idiots, you know, stop being an asshole and just, you know, we're not going there. You just stand
right,
up for yourself.
Right, right.
And I think it's a different culture today. I just do.
It's also about power. I was almost having this conversation yesterday because they don't really see it in that way. Do I dare say this because we're past 50 years old that it's, quote, the millennial thing? Is it got something? Am I right in even saying that, that may have something to do well, that's going on? Because, you know, one of the things about me, and you said that for every person, and you were in television, I was in radio, but, you know, I had a lot of assholes that you put up with, especially when you're young. But, you know, there was always a guy that helped me, whether he was the news director or this other guy. There was always a guy, even though the other ones might have been idiots, there was always a guy that helped me all the time that said, do this and do that and do it this way. And there was, like you said, there was always those kind of people. And that's what I wonder about today. Like you said, you look great. Is that supposed to be, I don't know how I'm supposed to be with that. Mainly because I talked to my producer who's younger than I am. And I always look at him and they go, well, it's okay. But I figure I've known him for 20 years, even though he's so much younger than me. I've known him since he was a kid. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I can yell and scream at him all. And he's over that. So but I just, you know, I mean, let's talk about Matt Lauer. I wish I had a place where I could plug it in and you couldn't get out the door because I'd be screaming at you the whole time, but I wouldn't be coming on to you. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, I want one of those buttons where you can push and you can't go outside the door. What was that?
You know, the whole thing is, it's so sickens me because, and you reference it. It's the power differential that exists. You know, you get young women who are breaking into the business, and they think that, you know, they want to make a good impression, and they don't want somebody to not give them, you know, career advancement, and so they're asked to do what they're asked to do. And it could be bring in a cup of coffee or it could be, you know, bending over when somebody pulls their pants down. I don't know.
Right.
I wish that women felt more empowered, and maybe it'll move on. Maybe this will be the sea change. I hope that women feel empowered to be able to say, no, not interested in that and not going there. But it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And you know what? It shouldn't be all on women. I have a son, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had this discussion with him, and I said, you know what? I need to raise you. I mean, hopefully I'm pretty much there. He's 17. You know, I need to send you off in the world, is what I've actually said to him, to be, you know, good, kind, with proper morals and values, and to understand that above all, you have to respect and take care of women and yourself. But, you know, you have to, there's a certain way that you should treat all people, but especially women. It's just that simple. Because let me tell you something, it's not that easy to be the mother of a son these days either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rules have dramatically changed. Things that, you know, could get away with, you know, when we were growing up and when we were in college or whatever, totally different environment.
Right. Yeah.
You know, believe me, that's a whole nother story. That's Pandora's box, and you know, Pandora ain't always a friendly gal.
Let me ask you about the Pats and the babies. Tell me about that.
Wait, say it again?
Talk to me about the Pats and their new babies over there.
Oh, it was, you know what? It was just a fun story.
Well, we all loved it, and we laughed so much because we loved it. That was the thing. I don't know if you, I mean, it was a fun story, yet we all laughed. We thought it was fun.
Right, and you know, we can have a little bit of that. You know what I mean? You know, for every story that I do, this year I did a very intense story with Tom Brady's mom, Galen Brady, and it was the first time, I didn't actually know this at that moment, but it's the first time she'd ever done an interview. And it was a very, very compelling, very emotional story with her and her husband, and basically their journey through cancer diagnosis and going through the season and the Super Bowl and this and that. And this is the world that we live in now, babe. I think it got more views on Facebook and Instagram and all than any other story that had been on NFL media. So, you know, it touched a nerve for people, and that was really great. And then you've got this other story with the Patriots and their kids, which is the complete opposite. It's basically found out that six players all had babies, seven of them, because there's one set of twins, within about a 4 to 5 week period of one another. So the opening question of the story, of the conversation is, you know, we're all sitting together, myself and the six players, and I said, you know, look, I noticed when you get pregnant, they pull out a little calculator and they'll tell you when your due date is. But you can go the other way. You can look at when the birth date was, and you go back and you say, here's the conception date. And I said, well, all I can ask is, you know, what was going on at the beginning of last summer? And they all just cracked up. And it was a funny moment because two of them, if you look at the exact date, it was like the day after their OTAs ended, you know, their off-season programs. So I'm like, hey, celebrating, hey, the start of the off-season officially. So, you know, it was just funny. And then seeing these guys, you know, with their kids, and it was just a fun story where you can see these guys as people, because that's the other thing. Like, look, it's like, you know, you always, I'm sure you get the same thing. You get asked the same question. Oh, who's the best interview you ever did? Who's the worst interview you ever did? Who's the biggest jerk? Who's the nicest person? And I always say, you know what? It's no different than any business. You got your share of assholes. You got your share of great people.
Right.
You got your share of idiots. You've got your share of really smart, aware people. It's no different. But to that point, these athletes, while they may be blessed with all kinds of athletic ability and some, you know, some crazy genes because they're going to, you know, beat their heads against each other, they're still human beings. They're sons, their fathers, their brothers, their husbands. And to see them in a little bit of a different light, I think is always just it's a really good thing. You know, hearing Chris Hogan talk about getting up in the middle of the night with his twins and feeling so overwhelmed and all is just, you know, these are really fun stories. And listening to Devin McCourty talk about how he, you know, he wore a T-shirt that said All-Star Labor Coach because his wife was in labor for seemingly like almost, it felt like 3 days. And he's like, yeah, and I'm holding one of her legs. And I said, okay, enough. I don't need to hear too many details here, you know. But it's just, you know, you hear this sort of stuff, and it's just, it's great. It's great. And then one of the players who, you know, just lauds his wife like crazy as well he should, you know, for pretty much doing everything. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm not always the most comfortable alone with the kids. And then when we're doing a little photo shoot, the kids threw up all over him. And it was just perfect. You know, great, great timing on that. So it was just a fun story. The players were great to work with. The Patriots couldn't have been more cooperative. And it's just nice to see these guys in a different light.
Can we talk again sometime? Because it's always hard to get in touch with you, but I love talking with you. It's been so terrific.
It's wonderful. You're so easy to talk to, and I really hope that we can talk again soon. Whenever you want, we will coordinate our schedules, and I really appreciate you having me on, and happy holidays to you.
And thank you to you, too, and you guys have fun. Are you freezing cold right now?
That would be correct.
Yeah, okay. I'm not. That's all I can say.
Here on the East Coast, yes. Don't, please do not rub in how warm it is in Florida. Please.
All right. I won't do that at all because it's only about, what, 84 right now? I love you, Andrea.
I can't end calling you the B word. So the only B word I can call you is babe. So that's about it.
That would be all right. Andrea, I love it. Thank you so much. Happy holidays
Thanks
to
so
you.
Thanks so much, babe. Great to be on with you. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, did I not tell you that was going to be great? Andrea Kramer is the best ever, and it was really good. It was good to hear both sides of everything in all of that. Listen, I'm watching TV, and nothing is making me more excited, except I wish Forge and Fire would be back on. I really do. And you know what? Now that they changed, well, it doesn't matter, but they changed my PBS station, and now everything is on Things I Don't Know, and I'm having to write it on my arm. Oh, by the way, did I tell you I'm getting a tattoo? Oh, God. I'm going to get this tattoo, and I want it here, but the guy said to me, this is going to hurt like hell. And I don't want to say anything, but I'm not good at the hurting part. I'm really not. So they said, well, maybe they'll put it here, but I want to get it. I haven't done it yet, but I have to go and see him at Nemo's Tattoo. You think this is a good place for me to go? Nemo's Tattoo. Well, if I get this, I'll be able to tell you about it. All right, have a good time. Have a wonderful time with Andrea because it's really great. I am the fabulous sports babe.
If you know the babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been the fabulous sports babe on Radio Influence. Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the fabulous sports babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penzer. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.